it, but that's okay. It'll be fine. All right, one, two.
Welcome, everybody. This is another Ingus podcast. We're coming to you live from the National Guard Memorial Building in Washington, D.C. Today is Monday, August 26th, and we want to do a special thank you to our corporate partner, Grantham University, for sponsoring our podcast. I'm here with Frank Yocum, our executive director. And Frank, you just came back from Kansas.
I was at Fort Leavenworth, but I was outside the walls.
Okay. Yep. Well, you want to give us a little bit of an update on your trip?
And maybe, I'd love to. I was invited to come out there by Sergeant Major Tony Rice, and he is with the Command Sergeant Major Development Program out at Fort Leavenworth. And so he invited me to come out and meet with some of our National Guard Battalion and Brigade Sergeant Majors. And so I took the opportunity to travel out there for one day to be able to meet with them and to let them know about some of our programs that we have here at Ingus, including the Emergency Financial Relief with the We Care for America program and our scholarships and Operation Vet Care and just some other helps that they have, plus to give them a legislative update about what's happening on the Hill with the NDAA. I told them that was all perishable because this is August, we're on recess, and come September, even though we only have, well, they say we have 15 legislative days left, but it's really, if they leave on the weekends and come back, we've got maybe 9 legislative days before the end of the fiscal year. But I kind of gave them a heads up on some of the stuff that was in the NDAA and what was in the Appropriations Act and what the landscape looked like. And my soft prediction for a continuing resolution coming up here in October, I don't think we're going to get all the appropriate bills put together.
And that's the
Senate's got to do all 12 of them, so I don't know. It's going to be
a fair prediction.
Yep. So, but one of the things I did learn out there that was kind of interesting, we were talking about some of the provisions of the NDAA as it dealt with Title V people, technicians.
Sure.
In the law, or in the House version and the Senate version, they both set about the same number of military technicians as far as in strength goes.
Right.
However, the House bill sets it as a floor. In other words, not less than that number of technicians, and the Senate says not more than that number, which is a ceiling. And so we started talking about that and morphed into a discussion about those that are on Title V status. Mm-hmm. That have converted already. A couple of years ago, they authorized a 12.6% conversion to Title V status, and some states have been very aggressive about that, and others have not been as aggressive. But in this one Sergeant Major state that he was talking about, he said that some of their Title V people have given up their National Guard drill weekends, and instead they have affiliated with the Army Reserve. And since they no longer are part of the Guard during the week, Monday through Friday, they're working for the Guard as civil service technicians, military technicians, on Title V status. But on the weekends, they're now Army Reservists, and they're accepting ADOS assignments for 3 to 6 months or longer on ADOS tours, which has caused readiness issues for the Guard and employment issues for the Guard, because being civil service, they have to let them go to take an active duty order, but.
Right.
During the week, they might be helping to get some equipment ready for mobilization for those particular guard units, and not being there, they're kind of at a loss. And so
Sure. It
was a different perspective on what's happening out in the field, and it's kind of great. They've invited me to come back every month, so
good.
I think every month I'll be able to get a little bit more ground truth of what's happening down there, and not so much D.C. truth,
right?
As you know, what people up here think.
It's a good kind of depiction of the second and third order effects of some of the policy we deal with.
That's right.
You know, being out in the States and really, really getting an understanding of what that actually means. We were speaking about this obviously offline before we started recording, but you know, we have a number of corporate partners that might be able to pick up some of that business, and that could be helpful. But at the same time, I mean, strategically, is that something that we really want to do? I mean, we need to be able to have enough government officials that are able to, maintain our platforms, and if the force mix is appropriate with industry and government officials, so be it. But if they haven't been thinking of those second and third order effects that you just mentioned, then that could be a problem.
I can see a whole cottage industry though of people filling in on that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, kind of an aside to that, you know, one of the things that we experience around here is people who rent apartments and leave apartments. There's restoration companies that come in instead of the apartment management having to fix up the apartments, they hire these firm to come in and just clean the place up, repaint it, get it ready for the next occupant, you know, and maybe that cottage industry would work in the guard to say, you know, if you have some mill techs that are Title Fives that aren't guardsmen on the weekends and they have to go off for whatever other duties they may have, maybe there's a cottage industry to fill in on those and say, you know, we've worked at the main, at an OMS or a CSMS in Kansas, we can do the same thing in Iowa, or we can do the same thing in Oklahoma, and they start up kind of a cottage industry of filling in for the guard in those very, very narrow but specific things that can be done.
Exactly.
And it's opportunity that there might be presenting itself there as well.
Yeah, not all bad necessarily, but definitely something that, you know, this is probably not the last we'll hear of this. As this continues,
probably
to
not
evolve.
What Congress thought of when it
might not have been. No, of course it might not have been. But like we've said, you know, there are second and third order effects to these things, and you know, we'll this isn't the last time we'll talk about it. I know that's true.
And many thanks to Tony Rice and the folks out at Fort Leavenworth for allowing me to come out. I'm looking forward to my next trip and follow on trips after that, so that you can help us as we help you.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So maybe we'll carry on the legislative theme. A couple other provisions in the fiscal year 20 National Defense Authorization Act. We talked about a number of times before on previous podcasts and in previous years for that matter, but there's a provision in this year's NDAA that's passed by the House of Representatives that expands TRICARE Reserve Select to the technician population and to eligible federal employees. That would not go into effect until the year 2030 if it survives conference next month, but we'll have an ability for, you know, next year and in future Congresses to try to find the funding to actually put that into effect before the year 2030. But it's a legislative maneuver, and it's an interesting way to kind of get our foot in the door and then to work back on funding. We also, the House passed version has 12304B early retirement credit provision in the bill that would pay for that, and it would actually make it retroactive. And so we're obviously closely monitoring that, and our conference letter from this month that you penned includes those two provisions. Do you want to talk a little bit maybe about the retirement home provision that's the...
Yeah, that's one that we were not really tracking that closely, but Sergeant Major Kepner kind of clued us to it, and it's on the Senate side, and the Armed Forces Retirement Home is a residential facility for enlisted folks, both here in Washington, D.C., and in Gulfport, Mississippi, I believe it is, and they have a very strict, stringent criteria for eligibility, and most guardsmen don't qualify for that unless they've been combat injured or they have a 20-year active duty retirement, and in most cases they don't. So the provision on the Senate side and the NDAA widens the eligibility to include National Guardsmen and reservists, and opens those two facilities up just a little bit more for Guard and Reserve folks. Talking with the Sergeant Major and talking with the folks over at the Armed Forces Retirement Home, I think they're at about 60% capacity right now. I think Biloxi, they said, is about 80% capacity.
Right.
And one of the other things they're talking about doing is opening up an Armed Forces Retirement Home on the West Coast.
Sure.
And not just being East Coast-based thing, but to have it out there as well. More to follow on that. We talked about devils in the details. And there's also these other second and third order of effects, as you mentioned. And so right now, active duty folks have a involuntary deduction to their pay of 50 cents or something like that, or a dollar a month. And the question is, if guardsmen become eligible now, do they start having to have an involuntary reduction in their pay as well for 50 cents or a dollar a month to be eligible for this? That hasn't been ironed out yet. That's not in the legislation either.
Sure.
And so we're not really sure what all that's going to entail. Again, it's only on the Senate side. It's not on the House side. We have written to our staff members on the House side, our friends over there, and told them that we do support that.
Right.
In concept, we support it. We don't know all the details, but in concept, we do support that. So conferences, this is going on right now, and we'll finish up hopefully in September, and we'll find out if it sticks or if it falls out.
Right.
It's another one of those.
The staffs, it's an interesting time with our conference, and that obviously the topic came up a number of times when we were in Des Moines. And I understand Sergeant Major Kepner wasn't able to attend, but I'm glad that you were able to chat with him, as I did with a number of our members, about this issue. They brought it to our attention. I would say that it'd be an interesting time with the staffers on the committees, informally conferencing, and then when August recess ends here after Labor Day, and the members return to Washington D.C. and they start getting their conference assignments and they have a goal here to finish by the end of the fiscal year on the authorizing side. Obviously,
right.
Your comments on the appropriation side, I can't disagree with at the moment. I see at least a short-term continuing resolution, CR in our future, but at least for the authorizers, they intend to finish on time. And so
59th year in a row they're looking at.
Exactly. This is a 59th year in a row in a big year. So.
But there are two provisions that I think are going to pass directly into law. And one of them is one that we worked on and helped to champion, and that was the military student identifier.
Absolutely.
And that's in the bill as well. Now, if you go out and Google the bill, either Senate Bill 1790 or the House Bill 2500, you won't find the words military student identifier.
Right.
The legislative language is so different that you have to kind of know it's there and have to know what other part of the law that it refers to and what title it refers to, because it's not in Title 10. Mm-hmm. But the military student identifier will be, since it's in both bills, it's identical language, it'll flow through. And the other real big one that everybody's concerned about is the 3.1% pay raise. It's mm-hmm. in both bills as well, and so it looks like that's going to flow through to law as well.
It does.
And that'll be probably one of the larger pay raises we've had in several years.
In several years, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So those are two positive things. And the former student identifier issue we've talked about a number of times, and both in our podcast and information we put out in our drill week talking points. So. I think, other than really all, I think I'll wrap up kind of talking about another successful conference at Des Moines. We passed 29 resolutions in the Resolutions Committee, the stuff for the National Office to kind of chew on and socialize on Capitol Hill and try to advocate for in future sessions of Congress. Nothing really jumps off the page. I think some of them are new, others are repeats. And we obviously, as we always do, we'll do everything we can to assess them, understand them, and successfully advocate for them.
That's right. That's right. That's what we're here for. We had some great speakers, too.
We did.
At the conference. We're hoping to have even better speakers next year. We had some really good ones this year, and I think we're going to be able to expand upon that. So if you missed our conference this year, please join us in Little Rock, Arkansas next year. And we should be posting some videos of some of the speakers here.
Yeah.
On our YouTube channel. Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter.
Got to go through that protocol office, right?
Well, maybe. Just for some of the stuff for the SEAC. But, keep looking out there on our social media. Watch our website. Watch our press releases. We will put stuff out there for you. Just keep checking back with us.
Yeah, absolutely. As Congress as recess is winding down over the next mm-hmm. 2 weeks and things get busy, we'll definitely do another one of these podcasts. And we can't thank Grantham University or our corporate partner enough for sponsoring this podcast. And many more to come. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Pretty good.
This thing is like super strong. It's like shaking this whole thing.
And I've taped off most of it.